Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Tesla violates labor law once again. What the state of Tennessee is trying to do to workers who want to organize. Today on the show, we check in with the National Council of Occupational Safety and Health and tell you about the Dirty Dozen employers in the United States of America. And later, Dave Jamieson, the labor reporter for the Huffington Post. Welcome to the Thursday, May 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Melissa Moriarty, who is the communications director for an organization we often quote on the show. In fact, she's been on several times. National COSH, that's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. NationalCosh.org is their website. Last week, we told you about the Dirty Dozen Unsafe Employers for 2023, and Melissa is going to give us a little details on each and every one of them. Topping the list, Amazon, Tesla, FedEx, Norfolk Southern, obviously because of that train derailment, which they're still trying to figure out right now. But National COSH has been doing this for a number of years, and she's going to, like I said, give us a little more details. In fact, at their press conference last week, they had a relative of the cannabis industry, and this was a relative of a worker who died of occupational asthma. She's also going to focus on supporting some worker campaigns with a health and safety component. So, for example, their group in Massachusetts, which is known as MassCosh, is in the beginning stages of developing a health and safety campaign specifically targeting workers at this company called True Leave. That's where that cannabis worker died. So the whole idea here, if there is an accident on the job, which is most likely preventable, National COSH and other organizations like that are trying to use that as an example to change the method of operation in those respective companies so workers are safer down the road. Kind of similar to what we talked about yesterday. We had a representative from OSHA because this week is National Safety Stand Down to Prevent Falls in Construction. And this is a voluntary event that's targeted to employers to talk directly to employees about safety. Any workplace can hold a stand down by taking a break to focus on fall hazards. And if you want to share your story, it's important that the stories get out there so people know what's going on. The hashtag is Stand Down for Safety, and that's the number 4. And that's courtesy of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. So important that we focus on this issue. And just like we talked about with Workers' Memorial Day last week, last Friday, you got somebody wakes up in the morning, they have breakfast, they kiss their wife goodbye, and then they don't come home at the end of the day because of some crazy accident at work. You never know what's going to happen. And over the course of the year, these are on-the-job deaths. It's over 5,000. And then think about the people that work in dangerous industries like mining, for example. They may be breathing something horrible. So years later, they get complications and they have a very difficult time trying to get restitution as a result of what they did on the job for 30, 40 years. So Melissa Moriarty is going to be our first guest to talk about that and more. Dave Jamieson will be joining us later in the show. He is the labor reporter for the Huffington Post, now known as the Huff Post. He's been there since 2011. And before joining the D.C. Bureau, he was a staff writer at the Washington City Paper and a freelancer contributing to Slate, The New Republic, even The Washington Post. And he's won a number of awards. And in fact, he wrote a nonfiction book titled Mint Condition, How Baseball Cards Became an American Obsession. Great guy. We've had him on the show a couple times. It's been a while. But I think it's cool that the Huff Post has a labor reporter. There was a time in America years ago that almost every newspaper had a labor beat reporter. And, you know, with the decline of unions, well, they got moved. And now they call them maybe workforce reporters, lifestyle reporters. But Dave has got this position locked in. And I'll tell you, he's busy. I mean, yes, you know, there's a lot of organizing going on, a lot of strikes going on. In fact, one of his last posts was on the Hollywood writers going on strike this week. And in fact, I just want to read a little part of it real quickly here. He talked to a screenwriter, Alex Blagg. And the big issue here, they're all frustrated, people like Alex, because the industry is making a lot of money. They're doing a lot with streaming now, and the workers are not getting compensated. And this was an overwhelming vote to go on strike. Blagg posted, even though I've created shows, won Emmys, he's been on the TV series The Blacklist, sold two features, and staffed steadily in TV for 8 straight years. Been doing all of that. He still can't make a living as a writer. He still can't do it. And some of them are trying to get extra jobs. That's how bad the pay is. Another issue is what they call minimum pay under the contract. About a decade ago, 10% of the co-producers were working at the minimum rate. That number is now 59%. 59%. And you throw in inflation, they're not getting anywhere. So Dave Jamieson will be our second guest on the show. Now a brief look into the world of labor. This is brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, and equity investment options for clients nationwide. Been doing this since 1928. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Well, Tesla violated U.S. labor law again. This according to yet another lawsuit before the National Labor Board. The Tesla Service Center, this is in Florida, was accused of restricting employees from discussing pay and working conditions with each other or reporting complaints to management. Well, 2 years ago, workers complained that new hires were earning more than existing workers. The service center responded by instructing facility employees not to share information about their salary. One of the technicians who submitted a complaint was fired a few weeks later. Well, the ruling comes with a slap on the wrist for the company. Tesla has been ordered to cease and desist from violating the rights of workers. That's it. And now the service center will be required to post a notice of the violation and email the notice to employees. There's our labor law. In the Tennessee State Senate, a bill moving through committees would, get this, deny certain state grants to business that allow their workers to unionize by card check. Can you believe that? This is the same state that enshrined right to work into their constitution. See, there's some organizing going on down there by auto workers. I'm going to take you back a little bit here to Volkswagen. Remember that? Chattanooga, 2014. They tried to organize, and then they tried to do it again in 2019. Volkswagen facilities, almost everywhere else in the world, are unionized. Not in Tennessee. Mm-mm-mm. The campaigns in Chattanooga face fierce opposition from high-level public officials in the state and ultimately failed. I remember that so well. First thing they said, oh, the Volkswagen doesn't want a union. They actually did. They have these workers' councils. But they said, oh, no, they're gonna move the jobs to Mexico. Well, these campaigns might have been successful without that, plus the UAW and Volkswagen agreeing to a card check agreement, which provides that the employer will recognize the union after it demonstrates majority support. Well, then, in 2021, the Tennessee legislature approved a large spending package that enabled Ford to commit to a $5.6 billion electric vehicle and battery plant in the western part of the state. The UAW and Ford agreed to conduct future unionization efforts at the facility under the card check framework. To the extent that the state labor movement hopes that other companies taking advantage of state grants to open up in Tennessee would follow suit, the legislation that they're working on now would represent a major hurdle. Depending on how transparently the legislation seeks to implement labor policy in the state, now it may face legal challenges under the labor board's preemption doctrine if it is enacted. So bottom line is this. If there's any state money going to a business that may unionize, they're not going to get the state money. Just deny it. Unbelievable what they are doing against unions. Got some good news in northeastern Ohio. Two more Starbucks have filed for union elections in the greater Cleveland area, one in Strongsville, Ohio, and the other in Aurora. In letters sent to the company, the workers said they are dealing with staffing shortages and equipment issues at the stores. Letters also said the workers are not getting paid a fair wage. Said all of these factors weighed into the decision to unionize. Workers at the Aurora store said, "We cannot build our futures at this company as long as we have no say in what happens to us." Now, five stores in the Cleveland area already had elections and won the right to form a union. The stores have all joined or are trying to join Workers United, which is an affiliate of the Service Employees International Union. In a release statement, Starbucks said it believes that not having a union is the best thing for the company and workers so they can have a direct relationship. And they're also saying that they're paying them good money. Baristas make between $15 and $23 an hour, average wage $17.50. They also highlighted the benefits that they offer, like health insurance, paid parental leave, and 401k matching. Now, according to the labor board, workers at more than 400 Starbucks have filed for elections, and close to 300 workers voted to form a union. Unfortunately, none of them have a first contract yet. After 65 days on the picket line, workers at Metalmatic, this is in Bedford Park, Illinois, have ratified their first union contract, winning equal pay for equal work and an end to major pay disparities. The workers, as 140 of them, who make steel tubing for major automakers and suppliers, joined UAW Local 588 in June of 2021 and have been fighting for a first contract for nearly 2 years. This is a Region 4. Their director, Brandon Campbell, said these members held a 24-7 picket line for 2 months through torrential rain, hurricane-force winds, and bitter cold. They showed us all the power of solidarity. If you're going to do my job, we should make the same pay, said Robert Stern, a member of UAW Local 588. It was a tough fight, but we have to stand up for what's right, and I am proud to be part of this union. And one more here before we break. A strike by 155 Canadian federal workers may be coming to an end. The union made a statement that progress has been made on remote work allowances and on wage increases for Treasury Board employees. The strike is scheduling to continue while negotiations over a deal for workers at Canada's revenue agency continue. The strike has affected a wide range of public services like tax return processing, and also passport renewals. Boy, that could be a problem, especially people wanting to go on vacation overseas. The revenue agency's employees want a 22.5% pay raise. This would be over 3 years. While the Treasury Board workers are looking for 13.5% over 3 years. The government offering each group 9%. All right, quick break when we come back. The Dirty Dozen employers in the United States.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. We always check in with the organization, the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health, known as National COSH. Joining us today is Melissa Moriarty, no stranger to America's Workforce. Last week, they came out with the Dirty Dozen Unsafe Employers for 2023. They always do this during a Workers' Memorial Week. Last Friday was Workers' Memorial Day. And the whole idea is to take a look at what's going on in various American businesses, how safe and actually how unsafe they are for workers. Melissa, welcome back to the show. Before we get into the Dirty Dozen, because I know you have some comments on each of the employers here, why don't you explain to our listeners, we get new listeners each and every day. Our podcast is growing nationwide and around the world. And why don't you explain what National COSH is all about? It's been around for some time. Maybe you can give us a little history and how effective your organization has been. Go ahead.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health is basically a movement for the health and safety activist movement. We have grassroots worker groups across the U.S., and we build worker power and their organizations so that workers can demand jobs that are safe and free from exploitation and abuse.
NationalCosh.org is the website. Now, you've been doing this for a number of years at the organization. How many years have they been coming out with this list of the Dirty Dozen employers? And this is a two-part question. Are you getting a lot of media play? I mean, when I see the Dirty Dozen employers, it gets my attention. I'm just wondering, how effective has it been?
It's been super effective. We got a ton of media play, about over a dozen media hits from the last conference that we had about it, which was on last Wednesday when we released the Dirty Dozen. But also really exciting to see a lot of social media activity and buzz when we released it. I was looking through our analytics, and we had definitely reached like close to 60,000 people just on Twitter alone.
Very good. And how long have you been doing the Dirty Dozen?
So, Kosh, this is their 11th year putting out a Dirty Dozen report.
Okay. Well, let's run down the list. And you do these in alphabetical order. It doesn't necessarily mean they're the worst, but Amazon is definitely up there. Let's start with Amazon. And you got to keep in mind that even though this came out in 2023, we're still navigating for the last couple of years in the pandemic, and we saw a lot of workers pass away as a result of unsafe working conditions. And Amazon is one of those companies. Can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, so Amazon, this is the fourth time they are on the Dirty Dozen list. Last year, there were multiple deaths at different Amazon warehouses where workers were killed. And at least seven citations at seven different locations for exposing workers to hazardous conditions last year. So that was one of the reasons that earned them a spot in the Dirty Dozen. Next up is FedEx. Overall, injuries and fatalities are on the rise in that particular company. And last year, three workers died at their Memphis hub, which prompted us to put them on the list as well. Let's see here. We have a construction company. It's kind of a trio called Hanover Company, Lithgow Contracting, Friends Masonry Construction, and their three Latino construction workers died when the scaffolding collapsed in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Lithgow Contracting has been cited nine times by OSHA, including for a previous scaffolding violation.
Melissa, if you don't mind, let me stop you right there, because this week, and I don't know if you're aware of this, this is a national safety stand down to prevent falls in construction week. In fact, we had a member of OSHA on the show yesterday to talk about what OSHA is doing. And basically, this is a voluntary event for employers to talk to employees about safety. And in this case, okay, scaffolding, it collapsed. There was probably something there that was overlooked on the job. And these workers, and we're talking about three construction workers that died when the scaffolding collapsed on the project. Horrible situation. And on top of it, you said they were cited how many times by OSHA as a result of this?
They had been cited nine times previously by OSHA for different offenses, including a citation for a scaffolding violation.
So obviously they didn't learn from their mistakes on that one. All right, let's move to Norfolk Southern. What's happening here?
Okay, Norfolk Southern and Class 1 Freight Railroads. They were nominated by the Railroad Workers United, which is a reform group within the unions, and everyone's heard of the derailment in Ohio. There's a derailment frequently on the news lately. And rail workers, previous to all these derailments, had been warning of huge safety problems long before these catastrophes started to occur. Precision schedule railroading is basically what these workers are fighting against, because it's the mechanism that these railroad companies use to cut staff, reduce time for safety inspections, and just put extra long trains on the nation's railways.
That's a situation in East Palestine, Ohio. I understand that they had way, way, way too many cars, and as a result, it put pressure on the wheel bearings, and the wheel bearings are basically what would be, they pretty much caught on fire. And as a result, they came off, the wheels came off the train, and they're still dealing with that. All right, let's move on to, what is this, Occidental Chemical and Westlake Chemical? What's happening here?
Yes, those are two asbestos companies. There's about 40,000 U.S. deaths each year from asbestos, and there's now an EPA ban going through, and these two companies are fighting this safety proposal. And as a result, because of them fighting the safety proposal, they aren't a spot on the Dirty Dozen.
And then we have Packer Sanitation Service, PSSI. This is a big story because we're talking about kids. And from what I understand, 100 children were found working illegally in these meat and poultry plants. Can you give us some more details on this?
Exactly. Well, this was a story that broke, I think, from the Washington Post. Just kind of the in-depth look at rampant child exploitation and labor that is happening across this country. And this isn't like your typical like teenager getting a summer job. These are children working in meatpacking industries or in factories doing dangerous jobs that are illegal for them to be doing because they're children, but they're being exploited by these big corporations and being put in really dangerous situations.
And Melissa, to your point, these are some big names in the food industry, Tyson and Cargill for one. And the issue of child labor is something that we've been addressing on the show. There's about 10 states that have moved to reduce the age for children. In fact, we did a show with the political director of the Iowa State Labor Federation on Monday of this week, and they want kids as young as 16 serving alcohol and working on roofs. So, I mean, we're going to see some more for the Dirty Dozen in years to come if that continues. All right, let's move on. What's this one? Sonoma Wise. Can you explain this one?
They're basically a lobbying group that has formed to fight the demands of California farm workers. And because they've been very aggressive in the way that they've tried to basically combat against these workers' demands, we place them on the Dirty Dozen. Thankfully, California farm workers in the Sonoma area have won recently significant victories to counter health standards due to climate change.
All right, Melissa, you know what? I got to take a quick break here. Melissa Moriarty joining us on our live line today. She is the communications director for National Kosh, nationalkosh.org. That's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. We're talking about the Dirty Dozen unsafe employers for 2023. We'll continue with the list, and we'll talk about the importance of what some organizations like National Kosh are doing to protect workers. Now that we know that these accidents are happening, we got to change things. We'll talk about that later in the show. We're going to check in with Dave Jamieson, the labor reporter for the Huffington Post. And there's a lot of organizing going on and striking. He's going to run it all down right here on the show. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce radio and podcast.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next portion of America's Workforce is sponsored by iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fun money and deliver a better experience. So here's what you do. Go to imed.com/union, and you will learn a whole lot more. Let's go back to our live line right now and rejoin Melissa Moriarty talking about the Dirty Dozen employers. We got a couple more to go here. Let's start with Swissport International AG Companies. More unsafe conditions. Melissa, tell us the story at Swissport.
Yeah, this one was huge because Swissport works in practically every airport in the country, doing cargo and all other types of jobs behind the scenes. And workers here are exposed to raw feces. They've been sprayed with poop when they go into the airplanes to clean them out after passengers leave. Just a range of unsafe conditions. The company has been cited 35 times by OSHA for safety violations since 2013. And it's important to note for this one that this is an international company based in Switzerland. They don't treat their workers in Europe because they can't the way that they treat their American workers.
Oh, my God. Did I hear you correctly say they were sprayed with poop?
Yeah, that is not an uncommon thing for Swissport workers to endure when they go and clean the bathrooms in the planes after people deplane. It's quite terrible.
Oh, my God. And the company has, I take it, they just haven't really responded to these charges right now. They continue to do what they're doing?
Correct. After the press conference, we got some media play on the Swissport worker who spoke, and I think it was the AP. They spoke with Swissport for their comments, and they were basically like, "No, we follow all safety standards. There's no problem."
And cited 35 times for OSHA from OSHA. All right, Tenet Healthcare Corporation. Let's move on. What's the story here?
This was a company that was brought to our attention by some union workers from the National Nurses Union. Since 2001, the company has paid close to $2 billion in fines for false claims, bribery, kickbacks, health and safety violations. And the staff there at Tenet Health say their employer cuts corners on safety at every turn.
I've been hearing a couple of stories about them. Very sad. Almost $2 billion in fines, and they're still doing it. All right, Tesla. This one's always in the news. In fact, I just talked about this, violating labor law. What's the story of Tesla?
So this was the Gigafactory in Texas where workers nominated Tesla. Workers there tend to be, the construction workers are employed by subcontractors of Tesla, and they just say that their working conditions within the plant are completely horrendous. Worker testimony showed that contractors were given fake certificates to prove that they had undergone real safety training, but in fact they hadn't undergone real safety training. A worker there last year died in 98 degree heat within the plant. The company has been cited more than 170 times for safety violations.
Unbelievable. And they fight the union anytime they have the opportunity to do so. Very sad. Fake certificates. Fake certificates on safety training. I like that.
Yeah,
very creative. Very creative there. Okay, here's one. This is crazy. Trulieve Cannabis Corporation. Apparently, cannabis dust. This is, this needs some explaining. What happened here?
Yeah, this is, Trulieve is a cannabis chain that is across the country. The location in Holyoke, Massachusetts, a woman there, age 27, kept inhaling cannabis dust as she was working. She complained so many times to her employer, begged them to give her mask, and they ignored her. She eventually died from an asthma attack after inhaling too much cannabis dust while working. The company has cited them seven times. The company has been cited seven times by OSHA for safety violations.
Wow. And she died before her 28th birthday. And now apparently her cousin was on your virtual last Wednesday. Is that right?
Yes, we invited her cousin, Alicia Bounce, to speak. She was Lorna's cousin. She spoke about how her cousin had really been excited to take on this job. Her cousin had been going through some personal rough patches and saw this job as a way to better herself. Sadly, that didn't end up being the case. Like I said, the PPE was taken away. She was calling her stepfather, asking her if he could get her one of those surgical masks because she kept on coughing, kept on just having really hard time breathing. Her employer didn't care. The situation is really sad, and MassCosh, one of our largest cosh groups in Massachusetts, is now starting a health and safety campaign, particularly targeted at cannabis workers' entry leave regarding occupational asthma and organizing workers there.
I'm reading, too, she had no pre-existing condition. I mean, again, she was 28 years old. She was young. She was excited about her job, and she's dead. Wow. This has lawsuit written all over it. Wow. We got one more here. Twin Peaks Restaurant. This is a little bit different. Explain it to me.
Yeah. So Twin Peaks Restaurant is also a chain in the United States. But their location in Brentwood, Tennessee, workers there nominated that particular location, although it's my understanding a lot of their locations are super problematic, because workers there face multiple accounts of sexual harassment daily. It's one of those kind of Hooter-like chains. So in addition to the frontline staff being sexually harassed, often by bosses, customers, whomever, the back-of-the-line kitchen workers also have endured a lot of humiliation and just safety issues in general. A lot of those workers, particularly within the Brentwood restaurants, were immigrant workers. They endured a lot of physical and verbal abuse from the owner. They were, at times, the lunches that they brought to eat during their lunch break were thrown away by the boss. Just total awful harassment and exploitation and intimidation. So eventually the workers there went on strike in January to start to protest the physical and verbal abuse. It was led by the immigrant workers, and then not much later after, the frontline workers, the waitresses, the hostesses, started joining the immigrant workers at the picket line.
So that's it with the Dirty Dozen Unsafe Employers for 2023. This is all on behalf of the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health, nationalkosh.org. That's also their hashtag on Twitter. You mentioned MassCosh. That's the Massachusetts organization, the affiliate. And they're in the stages. I guess they're developing a health and safety campaign. This is targeted at the workers at Trulieve. That's the one with the cannabis dust. Do you see that kind of thing expanding to get the word out to workers, especially? There's so many of them. Immigrants, a good example, they are afraid to speak out because you never know what's going to happen to them. Deportation is the first thing that comes up. These are scary times. But I'm just wondering, we got to get more messages out there. If workers see something on the job, they have to say something, and they have to do that right away before something tragic happens. What's National Kosh doing in that regard, Melissa?
Well, like I said, MassKosh is supporting the cannabis workers to organize around health and safety, particularly focusing in on occupational asthma. It's my hope that this will start an interesting conversation nationwide about the cannabis industry in general. As you know, it's starting to become legalized in many states, and now more and more factories are popping up, but that can't be at the sacrifice of worker safety or sacrificing their lives in the case of Lorna. I hope that this worker's death triggers closer OSHA industry standards and just general awareness about what the cannabis workers have to endure so that there's more safety preventions and measures that get implemented.
Right. Okay, we'll leave it on that note. Melissa Moriarty, Communication Director for National Kosh, and that's nationalkosh.org, National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. Good job. You keep up the good work. Stay in touch with us. I mean, this is a labor union show, and it's important. And we know union workplaces are much, much safer because of the training, especially when it goes to building trades, apprenticeship programs. We talk about this almost every day on the show, so it's important to get that word, that message out there. You take care. Stay in touch, okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Dave Jamieson, a reporter, a labor beat reporter with the Huffington Post coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org. Let's go to Washington, D.C. right now. Welcome a dear friend. Haven't had him on for a number of years. Dave Jamieson is his name, and he is the labor beat reporter for the Huffington Post, which is now called the Huff Post. And HuffPost.com is their website. And when I say labor beat reporter, there's not too many in that category. Dave, I was mentioning this at the top of the show. Almost every newspaper back in the old days had a labor reporter. Of course, labor was a little stronger, or unions were a little stronger back then. But it's good to know that the Huffington Post saw the light of day many years ago and, you know, made you the labor beat reporter. And we should mention, what union is at the Huffington Post? Which one is that?
Hey, Flash, yeah, we're members of the Writers Guild of America East.
Okay. And that's one of the unions that's on strike at right now in the Hollywood writers, right?
That's right, yeah. Our fellow members in the Writers Guild of America East and West, the screenwriters are all on strike, about 11,000 of them.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about that, plus your story. I saw your post on the Medieval Times, but let's talk a little bit about you. You've been at the Huff Post since 2011, and how long has the union been involved there? And maybe you could just, let's start right there as far as getting the union in the publication, because we're seeing, we do a lot with the News Guild, different union and all that, but we're seeing a lot of organizing, especially on digital platforms, so how did that materialize for you?
Yeah, so the HuffPost newsroom organized around 2015, and we just got, I think, what was our third contract, our third three-year contract. So we've been around a good while now. We were one of the newsrooms that sort of, Gawker was kind of the first of the digital native, as we say, newsrooms that unionized. It was kind of very unusual for a web-only publication. It was actually kind of unheard of for a web-only publication to have a union. Of course, the union's been around, you know, going back 100-odd years in the newspaper industry, but you know, not so much in the sort of the new digital space. So after Gawker, did that. We did that. Vice did that. A whole bunch of publications did that. BuzzFeed News did that. Joining either Writers Guild or the News Guild. So it's been quite a wave in the industry. Of course, the industry is in a lot of turmoil now. BuzzFeed News itself is shutting down, and a lot of those digital native sites have gone through quite a few ups and downs and are really in a rough spot now. A lot of layoffs going on, but there has been a lot of organizing. I think a lot of people feel that has helped help people through a rough time here, where they've at least got kind of a seat at the table. Unfortunately, there's a lot of negotiating severance and such these days, but hopefully the industry will start to settle down a bit.
Yeah, let's hope so. How is the Huffington Post doing financially? Do you have any indication of that?
Well, we're told we're doing well. Our CEO recently said he's been encouraged with where HuffPost is at, and we've got a vibrant homepage and a loyal base of readers. Unfortunately, BuzzFeed News, those are our colleagues. We're all under the same roof. We're owned by BuzzFeed now. And so, seeing them phase out BuzzFeed News and laying off all these people has been very painful, for us to watch on the HuffPost side. And of course, we've been through several rounds of layoffs too. So, there's just been a lot of bloodbaths in the industry. And unfortunately, a lot of laid off writers out there right now and editors. But right now at HuffPost, we're here and we're continuing to crank out what we think is really great work.
Well, best of luck to you, and please keep in touch with us on all these issues so we can get that word out and what's going on. It is a tough business. It was a tough when I got involved in broadcasting years ago, and it's just gotten worse over the years. But let's talk about the Hollywood writers. I saw your post here a couple of days. They walked out on Tuesday, and what the issue is primarily in, well, technology has changed everything, let's be honest, but streaming seems to have exploded, and as a result, the workers are not getting compensated on that. Can you give us some insight on what they're saying to you?
Yeah, obviously, the way we take in film and TV shows has changed dramatically over the past few years with the huge pivot to streaming. And sort of the system that's been in place, the writers say is really kind of leaving them behind. So streaming, the way the studios tee up these shows, it works, quite a bit differently from, the traditional network television. So a lot of these shows, they have shorter seasons, right? And so, writers typically being paid on a per episode basis, this has hurt their pay, and the union says that a growing share of the writers at all levels, are making are now making the minimum under the contract. Right, the contract is known as the minimum basic agreement, and it spells out a lot of baselines, and they say a growing number of workers are just really at the bottom now, and they're very troubled by that. And another problematic part is residuals. Residuals are, essentially payments you receive when your work is reused in some fashion. And so writers get residuals, actors get residuals, and streaming is kind of thrown that a little upside down as well, because typical reruns and, DVD sales, that stuff's not what it used to be. And the streaming model, has not really rewarded them on the residual side. So what you have here is thousands of writers who produce, people's favorite shows saying that they're like having a really, really hard time getting by. And so I think a lot of people saw this strike coming. There was a lot of space still between the two sides. And I think even just going into negotiations, people knew that this was going to be a really contentious one because of the way streaming has upended things.
The last strike was back in 2007, in which actually went into 2008, and it lasted 100 days. From what you're gathering, are we looking at something similar here?
I never make predictions on how long a strike might last, and I've often been wrong when I do make privately make predictions. But I think, you know, when you hear some of the way some of these, the way a lot of these workers are talking right now, I think they're you know, girding for a long fight if they need to do it. And as you said, the last strike was 100 days. That is a long one. This industry, when there is a strike, you know, these workers are not afraid to dig in for a long haul. So I would not be surprised at all if this went on for not just weeks but even months. So we'll see. And you know, as far as the impact of that, you start to see it. You know, you see it immediately in the late night stuff because that stuff is so reliant on the writers and quick turnaround and like topical news and comedy. You know, but eventually you'll start to see it on the sort of marquee shows if it goes on long enough, and possibly even film, and eventually people's viewers start to understand how important the writers are to this whole equation.
Yeah, when the studios start feeling the pinch in the pocketbook, that's when they might get serious about negotiating. So we'll see what happens here. Dave, I have to ask you, you've got to have a lot of people reaching out to you. I mean, you know, you're the Huffington Post or Huff Post is very prominent, and people know it's a labor-friendly publication. And the very fact, there's so darn much organizing going on. I mean, Starbucks, we just talked earlier, a couple more stores in northeastern Ohio voted to unionize. Amazon, I mean, there's a ton of stories, good stories for you. I'm just wondering about the relationship from those that are organizing. Do they contact you directly, say, hey, we need some PR on this story? Is any of that happening?
Well, I often do hear, you know, from workers, and of course, as a labor reporter who's been around a while, I try to be sourced up, you know, well in unions. You know, right now it's a really interesting time because of so many sort of high profile campaigns going on. It was really just a couple years ago where there had been very few breakthroughs at sort of like big name non-union companies, places like Amazon. You know, and of course, we've seen some big ones fall. Amazon had a warehouse unionized, 300 Starbucks now. But it's not just those. You also got Trader Joe's. There's been inroads made at Apple stores with the machinists and CWA organizing there. And so some of this is new sort of independent unions. So some of it's unions that have been around forever. So it's a really interesting time, and yeah, a lot of people are reaching out to me about, you know, the campaigns they're running right now, and you know, to be honest, there's so much happening. It's hard to keep track of it all, and you know, as a reporter, it's hard to stay on top of it all because so much is happening. You know, I always give people a caveat though. You know, there's been a lot of big labor successes, you know, particularly on the election front, but there's a lot of challenges too. We're not seeing, not yet anyway, you know, many contracts coming out of these fights. And of course, that's kind of a pretty important factor here. And that's kind of obviously the end game is to win some contractual protections and pay raises and such. And so there's you know, the battles still loom on those fronts. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways that's a harder lift. So,
yep.
So while we're seeing a lot of success on the organizing front, I think we're still, it's also revealing kind of the tall challenges that lie ahead too.
Organizing is one thing. Getting the first contract is another. Absolutely right, my brother. Dave Jamieson, labor reporter for the Huffington Post. Just Google Huff Post, and you can read his columns there. Please stay in touch and keep doing what you're doing, okay, brother?
Hey, thanks, Flash. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Columbus Central Ohio building trades, and it's our first Friday with Fred Redmond of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.